thank you all for your heartfelt words. Sally L. Haddock was born on November 15, 1916. She was 96 years old. She passed away on the 19th of December, in the evening corresponding to the seventh day of the Hebrew month of Tevet, 5707. Her parents, as Joey so eloquently mentioned, two wonderful names, and I'm assuming they were wonderful people as well, I didn't know them. Her father was Siman Tov Nachmias, and her mother was Donna Nachmias. She was born in Seattle, but her father passed away while she was still very young. She was very familiar with life's challenges. She married David Dixie Al-Hadif until his passing in 1980, and they were married for 40 wonderful years. And together, they raised three wonderful children, Barbara, Joey, and Michael. Their children tell me that their mother wasn't the textbook mother. She didn't worry about the usual maternal worries that so many mothers have. Rather, she became their friend. And I believe, you didn't tell me this, but I think this is probably the case, she actually kept you, all three of you, young because of her relationship with you. She was, I'm sure you always revered her as a mother and gave her tremendous respect, but she was your friend. I could tell that yesterday when we all spoke. She was blessed to find happiness later in her life. She married Maurice Steinberg, and they remained close and dear friends and companions until his passing just a few years ago. Her siblings, to que viva muchos años, Ventura Israel, and her brother Isaac Nachmias, but she had other siblings who preceded her in passing, Michael or Meir Nachmias, Shabbatai Nachmias, Yosef Nachmias, and Mordechai Nachmias, a large family. As mentioned before, they were no strangers to life's trials and tribulations. In fact, the family told me yesterday they grew up really just outright poor. They used the word poor. They didn't have a lot. But as Joey said, when she had the opportunity, in his case that he mentioned, when she received a driver's license, she used it for good. Similarly, when she might have had a few shekels in her pocket later in life, she used them for good. You know, there was a very interesting study or an interesting article, I'm not sure in what publication it was, several years ago, about an island off the coast of Chile, a couple of hundred miles off the coast of Chile. It was an uninhabited island for many years. There were people living on that island at some point in history, and it had a great seal population. As people do from time to time, they, whether they did it for hunting or outright abuse, we don't know, but this was many generations ago, they hurt and they abused those poor little seals. And the seals would scatter either into the ocean or back onto the island. Then it was known that that island was totally uninhabited for many generations. Later, when human beings approached that island, there were still seals there. And all of those seals, as soon as they felt the presence of human beings, scattered and ran for cover once again. So the question is, how generations later could those seals know to react that way at their first encounter of human beings? They weren't the ones that were hurt. It was their generations before them. So how would they have known to scatter? Very good question. I don't know if it's conclusive, but it certainly makes logical and rational sense that those kinds of things get stamped in people's and perhaps even animals' DNA. We remember, we have a national collective memory certain things happen to us in history, be it good or bad, you may never have heard of the instance or the anecdote, yet it is embossed in you indelibly. I believe with Sally Alhada, first of all, I don't think I've ever seen her. I don't even know what she looks like without a smile on her face. She was one of the most kind and generous human beings. But how did she know? How did she know how to pay it forward each time? How did she know? Was it just an inkling? Was it just an instinct? Maybe it was like the baby seals. You know, we come, and kindness and goodness is not specific nor exclusive to the Jewish faith. There are so many good people on this earth. There are so many good people in this world. We hear stories of the very good policeman in New York who helped a homeless individual. We hear about people who get in the ways of evil to protect the innocent. It's all over the world, and we should embrace that. Sally Alhada, from what I hear the stories and from the kindness that I know firsthand, I was one of those people in Albertsons who she talked to from time to time. And it was always an uplifting experience. And I believe she had stamped within her the values and the traditions of our forefathers. Without ever having to live in the land of Israel or in the land of Canaan or anywhere else, she embraced those values naturally. We tell the story of, I think it was Joey who mentioned it, she would never waste food. And it wasn't just take it home in a doggy bag. She would take it home in a doggy bag to give to somebody who needed it, perhaps on the street. Her heart couldn't handle seeing somebody else in need. She was always optimistic. She exuded happiness. And whenever she greeted you, as I alluded to before, she had, as they say in the Mishnah, Besever Panim Yafot. We're always, we are told, whenever we approach somebody, whenever you see someone, put on your best face. So some people have to force that, as if they're trying to adhere to a precept in the law. She did it naturally. She did it as part of her very fabric. That was the kind of individual she was. She was fun-loving. She had tremendous charm, and she was always, you know, I don't know the correct terminology, but she was always so well put together. She just appeared, she was a beautiful woman, but she conducted herself in such a dignified manner. One thing that is so difficult for so many human beings, all of us, I'm assuming, is try to be happy for the accomplishments of other people. That's very easy to say and difficult to do, especially when you live in a competitive environment. And the world in which we live today is, even if you're not in business, even if you're not running to the finish line, it's contagious. If you see people around you running, you will want to run with them. And you don't even know what you're running for or from. But she let time stand still. She never permitted the clock to control her life. She controlled the clock. Again, yesterday, the family told me lovingly that you never knew how long she was going to be engaged with someone in a conversation. If she didn't know you, it would be 5 or 10 minutes. But then the second time you encountered them, now that she knows you, it could be a half an hour to 45 minutes. Because time did not stand still for her. She moved the clock to her own desires. Everybody with whom she came in contact adored her. She really could not get enough of life. She embraced life in every single way. She and her husband, David Dixi Alhadef, I am told, were the life of every party. They just were, besides being a cute couple, they just embraced the room, and they lit up the rooms in which they walked. She was known as Auntie Sally to even people who weren't her nieces and nephews. As the outpouring of people here, of course, and those who spoke today, she has friends and had friends from all walks of life, from all neighborhoods, from with whomever she came in contact. She was a very God-fearing person. the synagogue, the Ezra Beseret, the Ladies Auxiliary of which she was president, was meant a lot to her. She revered her faith. She was a very faithful and devoted human being. I've seen this in our grandparents' generation and even our parents' generation. They had a special relationship with bodies of water. They would go to Alki. I mean, who from our community doesn't love Alki? We would go there as children, only to find out that you would find the whole community there on a good Sunday, sunny afternoon. Even to this day, you'll walk along the boardwalk in Alki on a Tuesday night in the summer, and it's beautiful, and I look to the water, and I look to the sky, and I turn to my wife, and I go, boy, this is really a nice city. If I didn't live here, I'd probably move here, because it's just beautiful. So she, too, loved West Seattle, loved Alki, and even though the water at Alki isn't the Pacific Ocean, it certainly connects to the Pacific Ocean, and it's not the Mediterranean, but it was the ocean. It was a natural body of water. And she would look to the water and she would recite something. She would say some kind of a prayer or something that to make her feel good. For I've seen some people take water from an ocean as if it was, you know, a rare and scarce commodity and wash their face in it. What they were doing, in my opinion, what they were doing is acknowledging one of the greatest creations by Almighty God on earth. They weren't there appeasing God. They weren't there trying to show God, look what a good girl I am. I love you so much. Please be kind to me. It wasn't that kind of a relationship. It was one of acknowledgement, like El Dios Santo Barujo, which she was saying. She goes, God is so great. His creations are so unreal that I am just astonished and moved by this nature. She was so spot on because even in rabbinic tradition, there is a beracha, there's a blessing that you recite upon seeing a great natural body of water. Not on man-made lakes or rivers, but in natural water you say, Baruch, you recite the beracha in Baruch, Maaseh Bereshit. You acknowledge God that He was the creator of all of these acts of creation. And there's even a beracha when you see certain seas like the Atlantic or the Pacific, where they're real huge and gigantic seas, you say that blessed are you, God, who has made this great water. So she was right in line with one of the most beautiful components of nature. And this was intuitive. Again, I think she was like one of those little seals many generations later that had in her stamped the DNA of our forebears, of our faith and of humanity. She was totally consistent and she was totally at peace and was not in conflict with the world around her and her faith. Because she was a lively and a happy individual, she exuded this kind of feeling with whomever she came in contact. And I think that's why we were all so uplifted. And so she was inspiring. I wished I could have asked her, what is your secret for being so happy and so such a glorious individual? That will be a secret. But I know we have the dividends of her life before us. May you live and be well to Barbara and to Joey and to Michael and your beautiful children, grandchildren, and her great-grandchildren. So your lives should be blessed. Her memory should always serve as a blessing to you, your dear friends, to so many people in this room. And everybody in this room not only comes to honor your mother and her memory, but they come to give you honor and to give you comfort. Joey, you're a real pasha, not only for teaching me how to fish about 15 years ago at Lake Chelan, but you are just an alma del Dios. You are just your family is exceptional. And I think all the times that your mother used to see me at Albertson's, she would always talk about David, because she knew we had a similar connection in New York. She was always proud of each and every one of you. Barbara, I know you were her guardian angel through life. You have her same smile. May you continue that forever. And Michael, here we are today in a room that, or be it this room or another room, that you have served the community unselfishly for so many years, and you are understandably quiet today, but the good that you have done, the chesed shel emet, that's the rabbinic expression for giving comfort to those people who need help, and you work for the brotherhood with all of your heart, and you help people in times of need. We're here for you today. May this time pass quickly, and may each and every one of you have only blessings, and may her memory always be a blessing.